So to redirect that a little bit up from the pelvis, though, the kidneys actually are in the middle of your abdomen. They're kind of centrally located. And
either side of your spine.
Either side of your spine. And what's really amazing to me is that these little organs are only about 1% of our total body weight. So a 200-pound adult has a pound of kidney on each side of the body. A 100-pound adult has only a half a pound of kidney on each side. That's not a lot of mass, considering that they accept 20% of all blood flow at all times. 1% of the body, these tiny little organs, has 20% of the cardiac output. In fact, they work so hard to produce that 1.5 liters of urine on a daily basis, they have the ability to filter 180 liters of water a day, 125 milliliters a minute, and yet they are able to retain 99% of it and only excrete 1 milliliter a minute.
Well, the thing that blows my mind about the kidneys is every minute a fifth of your blood goes through there.
A fifth, yes.
A fifth of your blood.
For something that's only 1/100th of the entire body mass.
You know, when I talk about kidneys to clients, one of the metaphors that I use is the air conditioning filter. If you pull the air conditioning filter out of the wall, that thing that's like 24 inches square,
yes,
and you crushed that air conditioning filter down into a mug, that's kind of what the inside of your kidneys looks like.
It is kind of like that.
It looks like a crinoline on a great big huge evening gown that you've crushed down into a coffee mug. Because inside the kidney are a million, count them, a million little teeny tiny surface areas that help to clean your blood.
Exactly. And it's really amazing because each one of these is intact and a separate filtering unit, millions in your body. And the end, it's basically the end of a capillary. The renal artery comes into the kidney. It divides again like a very exquisite tree, a huge tree. And at the very end of every limb, there's a little sac where the capillary divides into like this little mesh bag. But it's still got blood flow going through all of the little tiny tubules in there, and it comes out the other end into a vein. And it is the intense pressure buildup on the inside of that little sac that pushes water across the membrane. And if you think about the way this is set up, it's one cell layer thick. And if you take your hands and put them in front of you, and you take your fingers and you interleave your fingers and look at that, you have like a little interlaced mesh.
A ladder.
Like a ladder. And that is what this filtration apparatus looks like. Think of how delicate this is. One cell thick. The water has to get around little spaces between the fingers, and proteins have to be kept on one side and blood cells on one side. They're not supposed to go across. So it's a really exquisitely sensitive apparatus that's got the ability to filter a fifth of your blood every minute.
Well, and you know, when I talk to people about organs, I talk about how smart they are.
Mm-hmm.
And the kidneys are one of the really smart organs.
Super smart.
Because they pick what to keep and what to get rid of.
Yes.
And not only that, they manufacture hormones, they create compounds that help to build our blood. And a lot of people think of them only like toilets. They say, you know, I'm going to drink a lot of water and flush my kidneys. And yeah. I turn to them right away and say, you wish, because that is absolutely not how the kidneys work. They are truly a filter. And so when we think about the fact that we are exposed to toxins in the environment and we make toxins inside of our body, that we have to get rid of 85% of those toxins are excreted from the body via the kidneys. Only about 15% go through the bile and out the feces. But the majority of toxic waste, whether it's internally created endotoxins or externally exposed exotoxins, we have to transform them in the liver and send them to the kidney to be gotten rid of. So we're going to look right away at the people that have been doing medicine for the longest period of time, and that's the Chinese. And the Chinese put kidneys absolutely on the top of the list as the place where life itself comes from. They are considered to be the source of life.
Well, if you think about it, they are the source of our blood cells. kidneys produce the chemical erythropoietin, which is what Lance Armstrong, one of the things he got nailed for apparently, but it causes your red blood cells to grow. So it gives us the ability to transfer oxygen around the body and provides us that ability to move prana, which is the energy of life.
Well, Chinese medicine calls prana the jing.
Yes.
And I can remember when I first started studying Chinese medicine, everybody gets all wrapped around the concepts of yin and yang. And so when you learn to take pulses from a Chinese medicine standpoint, the first thing you're measuring is this balance, this ever so delicate back and forth between the yin and the yang of an organ. And underneath the yin and the yang of an organ is the qi of the organ, or the vitality of the organ. And then underneath the qi is the jing. And the jing is the true life force, and the kidneys are what store the jing. The entire body, all the organs, need jing in order to survive. And I can remember when I was first studying Chinese medicine, Dr. Ming, the Shanghai physician, MD, and seventh generation acupuncturist that I studied with out in Boulder, Colorado, she said the scariest thing in taking a pulse is finding somebody who has gone into their jing. And, you know, I use the example of your checking account that's hooked with your savings account. If you do something dumb like leave your paycheck on the dash for a week, I can't think of any blondes that might do that, and you overspend your checking account, well, then you've got your savings account to support that. And so that's the same thing as the relationship between the yin and yang and the qi. If your yin and yang get depleted, if either of them get depleted, your qi can support the function of the organ. But if I zero out my checking account and I have my safety net in my savings account, and if I zero out that, well, then I've got a line of credit underneath it. And that's what the jing is. The jing is the line of credit, the life force itself in your body.
You don't want to be borrowing against that one.
Your kidneys store the jing. So when Dr. Ming said to me, you never want to find somebody who's eaten into their jing, who's living off their jing, because you know they're on a short clock.
Yep.
At that time. And I can remember the very first time that there was somebody there who had, in fact, gone into their jing. And it was a couple who had gone to Alaska and were just beseeched by the screams of other campers to say, don't stay there, don't stay there. That place is loaded with mosquitoes. Well, they was their first trip to Alaska, and they thought that the people were exaggerating. They had never actually seen Alaskan mosquitoes, which are, of course, the size of birds. And so they went to this campground, and they doused themselves in DEET from head to toe, and then took duct tape and wrapped duct tape around their sleeves and around the bottom of their trousers, trying to keep the mosquitoes from getting in, which meant that all the vapors of the DEET were coming up through the neck of their shirt, and they were breathing them.
Oof.
And they did this for 3 days. Yeah, I know. It's scary just to even say it out loud.
Yes.
And they had been so toxically exposed as a result of this very dreadful mosquito repellent DEET that the young woman, who was only 28 years old at the time, had, quote, eaten into her jing. And when you went to take her kidney pulse, which is one of the ways that Chinese medicine takes a pulse, they're not just looking to count your heartbeats, they're looking to measure the vitality of the organs. There wasn't any kidney pulse.
Ooh.
Unfortunately, this young woman passed within a couple of months after that event, and it really brought home to me this concept of the jing, this concept of this foundational vitality of the body. And that foundational vitality of the body rests in the kidney. Chinese medicine calls it the mansion of fire and water. And when you think about fire and water, and you go, well, they're opposite. But in fact, if you've got a pot of water and you pour it on the fire, you put the fire out. If you have a pot of water on the stove and the fire is too hot, it burns up the water. But if you have the perfect amount of balance of fire and water, you make steam, and that's what helps to propel us forward. And that's exactly what we're trying to do with the kidneys. long before we have the yin and yang of the body, or even the qi of the body, we have the jing, what perpetuates life itself. And so even though those words are not common when we talk about Western medicine, the principles themselves are what we want to get a hold of, that these kidneys are not just filters that we're jamming stuff through. They actually are houses of holding the vitality of the body.
They really are, because they have so many other functions. I mean, waste and water management are definitively the principal function of the filter unit, but it's an extremely complex endocrine, inflammatory, and blood pressure control organ, and on top of it sits the adrenal glands, which are intricately associated with the same processes. But first of all, after water, I think acid-base balance is really one of the most crucial functions of the kidney. The kidney makes bicarbonate. So if you eat something that's highly acidic, like free fatty acids or
a big old steak.
Big old steak with lots of protein too, amino acids, or something like shellfish that has a lot of nucleic acids. These acids are acidifying your body, so you need something to neutralize them. And that's what the bicarbonate the kidney makes does. It also affects vitamin D metabolism, and calcium and bone mineral metabolism, and as I said before, the blood cell manufacture and blood pressure control.
Well, let's take one of those. You know, Chinese medicine says the kidneys rule the bones.
Yes.
And so vitamin D, you know, we get our little pill of vitamin D, our little capsule, because you've been smart enough to have your vitamin D tested. And when you got your blood work done, you got 2,5-OH vitamin D tested. Well, your body takes 2,5-OH vitamin D and it converts it. And it converts it into calcitrol. It converts it into something that, you know, if we found it today, we probably wouldn't have called it a vitamin. We would have probably called it a hormone.
Right.
And the nature of our ability to convert 2,5-OH vitamin D into its active form, 1,25-OH or dihydrovitamin D, really is a major function of the kidney. So a lot of people keep looking at osteoporosis as a deficiency of Fosamax or a deficiency of calcium without realizing that there is a tremendous relationship between osteoporosis and the health of the kidneys.
Yeah, really a lot of it. And you can push that balance in so many different ways. Excessive protein will change the pressures in the kidney and alter the way the kidney is starting to function. The protein will have phosphates associated with it generally, which puts another pressure on the system for calcium. Low calcium intake and low vitamin D intake will also affect that. But
well, let's just talk about phosphates for a minute here, because this is a subject that's especially dear to my heart.
Yes.
You know, when I look at the fact that the soda pop consumption in this country is finally starting to go down.
Yay.
We're down to 44 gallons a year.
Per person.
Per person.
Hmm.
I mean, that's...
I wonder who's drinking my share.
Well, but I mean, that's 3 gallons, you know... 4 gallons a month.
Yes.
You know, between 3 and 4 a month. So that means you're drinking 11 or 12 12-ounce cans of pop a week.
Yes.
And same story. We've said this before on No Nonsense Nutrition. If you're not drinking a can of pop every day and I'm not drinking a can of pop every day, somebody's drinking 6 cans of pop every day, and they're the people that are going to end up on kidney dialysis with osteoporosis.
Exactly.
Because what are the ingredients that's in soda? And we're talking about the dark colored soda
brown
here.
Brown sodas.
All the brown sodas. Is phosphoric acid. Do you hear phosphoric and phosphate? You need to. And you need to hear the other word, acid. So mm-hmm. We have to buffer those acids. You know, it was really funny. I had it was funny, not ha-ha, but funny, ironic.
Yes.
I had a client that came in who was into this, oh, alkaline. I got to eat alkaline. I have to drink alkaline water. You know, I have to eat an alkaline diet. And I see how incredibly naive the understanding is of most people when they talk about that.
Yes.
And she was going on and on about the importance of alkaline food, but she drank 2 diet colas a day. I said, you can't eat enough kale to alkalize the phosphoric acid that's in those 2 Diet Cokes, the soda pops that you're drinking every single day.
Right.
So without realizing it, she was eroding her bone. You know, the Europeans did a really beautiful study. It was a 10-country study, so it was very comprehensive. And it was tens of thousands of individuals. And what they found out is the clear-colored sodas, the ginger ales and such, they don't cause the bone loss because they don't have phosphoric acid. Doesn't mean it's a good idea. It's still 8 teaspoons of sugar in every can.
Right.
But the idea of the difference between the clear-colored soda pops and the brown-colored soda pops, there's a huge big difference. So when I read that the soda pop industry is starting to come out with all these fancier waters now because they're losing ground on the selling of soda down to 44 gallons
yeah.
a year, I mean, it just sounds ridiculous.
You're saving $1 billion off Coke's profits.
And so the nature of looking at the fact that this is the single biggest insult we have in the American diet. You know, when are we going to wake up and do the same thing that we did with cigarettes and tax the heck out of these soda pops so that we can pay for the medical costs that are being created, including things like kidney failure?
Seriously, the other double whammy of drinking those sodas, if you're not drinking diet, that is the sugar. Because it's really frightening to think of the diabetes epidemic and considering that diabetes is the principal cause of kidney failure in America, in the world. The sugar problems kill kidneys. There are other principal involved agents too, but that's high blood pressure. But high blood pressure is also associated with diabetes many times because of what sugar does to the kidneys, creating the back pressure problem that creates the blood pressure in the first place. Diabetes is more likely the cause of the secondary cause of high kidney failure. So the sugar is really going to be the principal cause of an epidemic of kidney failures that's going to come with the aging of the boomers because of this excess sugar, this diabetes epidemic.
So is this a good time for me to remind all the parents out there that shoving a whole basket full of Easter candy at your child may not be in the best interest of your child's future? You know, we've created a society where we go from one candy holiday to the next. About the time you finish the Halloween candy, you've got the Christmas candy. About the time you finish the Christmas candy, the Valentine candy is around. Mm-hmm. You barely got the Valentine candy out of the house, and the Easter candy shows up. And the Easter candy seems to be one of the most insidious of all of them because of the amount of dyes that are used in the jelly beans and the Peeps and the other so-called treats. Read the label on these things.
Yes.
They're not even food. You know, remember that Saturday Night Live skit where they said, it's a dessert topping. It's a floor wax. It's a dessert topping. It's a floor wax. Well, it's kind of the same thing when we're talking about a lot of these Easter treats. And so, granted, give your kid a chocolate bunny. Dark chocolate, hopefully.
Yes.
And stop there. The idea that this means that you love your child because you fill up a basket with treats, let's fill up the basket with a stuffed animal, with a toy, with fancy pencils. You know, you want to give your kid something, don't give your kid yellow dye number 5, tartrazine, which contributes to attention deficit disorder. Don't give your kid this pile of sugar that affects the kidneys, because now the kid grows up believing that every Easter they deserve a whole basket full of toxins.
Seriously, and that tartrazine yellow dye that Eve referred to is one of the most potent allergens, and though it's not high on the kidney disease list, inflammatory, allergenic, autoimmune type problems cause kidney failure, and so tartrazine actually could be associated with long-term kidney disease problems because it would injure the basement membrane.
Well, but I would also relate it to chronic ear noise, what a lot of people know as tinnitus or tinnitus.
Oh, yes.
What you know, the real aha, and I believe I talked about this client on a prior show, but I want to remind you of this. Chinese medicine says the kidneys open into the ear. And, you know, sometimes when you hear these statements from Chinese medicine, they don't make a whole lot of sense until you've been in Chinese medicine long enough to see these relationships. But Chinese medicine says in order to have harmonious hearing, you should be able to hear five tones, the five harmonic tones that come when you sit next to a waterfall, that the ear should be able to hear all of those tones. So I had a client years ago, and she had tinnitus, and it was making her nuts. And I asked her to keep a log because she said it rose and lowered in volume and intensity. It wasn't the same all the time.
Right.
And so I said, well, every time it goes up and starts shrieking at you, write down everything you've eaten for 6 hours before. Well, she thought I was completely nuts because it was, you know, the idea that this was connected to a food, she thought was preposterous because she was a very good eater. She was a breast cancer survivor, and she ate a macrobiotic diet where she had a lot of vegetables and a lot of grains and beans and a little bit of fish and just really ate clean. And she worked at one of those golf course residences up there on State Road 70. And every day she would take her lunch out and sit and eat under the tree at the picnic table. And, you know, she was vigilant about mm-hmm. taking care of herself. But when she would walk back in the building, the receptionist kept a bowl of jelly beans on her desk. And she would pick one yellow, one orange, and one red jelly bean. That was all she was going to allow herself. And by golly, at 2 o'clock, that ear would turn on. Beep!
Oh,
she'd
no.
have that sound. Well, she realized very quickly after keeping the diary that she didn't have any of these ear sounds on the weekend. She also realized the only time they happened was in the afternoon. By the time she left work at the end of the day, it had stopped. So I had her go to eat 3 red jelly beans. Didn't do it. 3 orange jelly beans. It did it.
Mm-hmm.
3 yellow jelly beans. It did it the worse.
Yes.
And that was how we traced it down to tartrazine as the agent that actually caused her tinnitus. And so when the Chinese say the kidney opens into the ear, now you understand that if you've got something weird going on with your ear, it may have something to do with your kidney. Your kidney is connected to your ear. Your kidney is connected to your bone. Your kidney is connected to your blood.
And it's all connected through membranes. Remember, I told you about that little finger-like, slit-like filtering apparatus. That is a membrane. On that membrane, the way it works is there are little spaces where water can get through, but there's also that space is too small for big particles to get through unless it gets leaky, but it has a magnetic negative charge, so it keeps all of your proteins, which are magnetically negative, inside the body. When that membrane gets disturbed by toxins like tartrazine or opiates like hydrocodone, that membrane is probably similar to the membrane in the ear. This is stretching the theory a bit, but if you put this toxin in there and you disrupt the kidney membrane, you'll disrupt the same membrane that's making your ear nerve work. And it's really common knowledge that opiate narcotics cause tinnitus. Rush Limbaugh had a horrible problem with that after his little addiction problem a couple of years ago. I remember reading about that. And I've heard numerous patients complain that when they are on chronic pain medicine, they do get ear ringing. And it's likely that it's also killing their kidneys at the same time that their ear is singing to them in that wrong pitch. So we really need to pay attention to these membranes and keep them stable, because otherwise we start getting leakage. And what happens when we get leakage in the kidney filtration apparatus is that these big proteins like albumin start to sneak through that finger-like filtration apparatus. And when they get on the other side of the apparatus, the collecting system called Bowman's space, where the urine collects to go out the tube and down into your bladder, gets filled with protein junk. Once that happens, you can't filter anymore. So the more protein coming through your kidney and into your urine is a way of recognizing the damage. So we have a test that we can look at to see if you're having problems. And that's a simple urinalysis to see if you're excreting protein.
And microalbumin.
Microalbumin. We use it all the time to see how diabetes is affecting the kidneys, how high blood pressure is, how toxins are. It's a really easy test to do. A simple urinalysis will tell us.
But let's go back to this relationship of hypertension. You know, hypertension, which 2 out of 3 people have by the time that they get their Medicare card, are a really vast array of conditions that can create hypertension. You know, again, from a Chinese medicine perspective, you can have hypertension because you have hardening of the arteries.
Yes.
You can have hypertension because you ate at the Chinese restaurant and got 9,000 milligrams of sodium, and you be swole up like a pig. And as a result, it's almost like somebody's stepping on the garden hose.
Yes.
But you can also get hypertension when the kidneys will not allow that one-fifth of your blood to get through there in a minute.
Exactly.
Because they're glommed up. You know, every filter that you've ever used, whether it's the air conditioning filter or the swimming pool filter, you know, gets particulate in it, gets little bibs and bobs of things that get jammed up in the filter over years.
Right.
And there are things that we can do to help to get those solids released out of the kidney. So the kidney doesn't just get rid of liquid waste. It gets rid of solid waste as well. Just as the bowel mostly gets rid of solid waste and a little bit of liquid waste, the kidney gets rid of mostly liquid waste and a little bit of solid waste. And so there are herbs, and most notably, I think of corn silk. When you get a fresh, beautiful ear of corn and you touch that silk and it's not brown and withered like it often is in the grocery store, but it's still soft and delicate. It's almost like the flaxen hair of a Norwegian child. And that corn silk is one of the things that's used as a diuretic. It's dried and it's turned into a tincture. And we use that tincture to help to dislodge some of those solids in the kidney. That collectively with some other herbs like the herb cleavers. If you've ever walked the countryside in England, just like here in Florida, you get the beggar lice sticking to the bottom of your trousers. In England, you would get cleavers sticking to the bottom of your trousers. And so that's a second herb that helps to get solids out of the kidney. So I often use combinations of these along with other herbs like burdock root and again, others, Uva Ursi, etc., that are designed to help to, quote, clean the kidneys as best we can. But one of the signs that shows up when your kidneys are not filtering correctly and the blood is backing up is you get dark circles under your eyes. Now, those of you that have Middle Eastern heritage, some of you were born with dark circles under your eyes. But for the most part, if you didn't used to have dark circles and now you've got dark circles, that may be a sign that that blood is not moving through your kidney quite as quickly as it should, because that crescent moon area underneath the eye is considered to be the visible reflex for the kidneys in Chinese facial diagnosis.
And so when that apparatus starts to get junked up, we have something called, each of those little filters is called a glomerulus. And a measure of that filtration rate is expressed in terms of a percent of that 125 milliliter per minute ability to flow water through that filtration apparatus. And so glomerular filtration rate is the best predictor of future kidney problems in current kidney function. Yes, GFR. And it's really an amazing thing, because if you lose a couple of nephrons, which are the glomeruli, if you lose a couple of those, you'll have the neighbors start to get a little bit bigger to accommodate. Nephron or the glomerular tubular ratio. You have to have a tubule is where it drains, the glomerulus is where it filters. You have to have equal numbers of them, because if you have a filter with no tube, it's not working. If you have a tube with no filter, it's not working. So the kidney's basically adapted so that if it gets junked up, you just lose that whole system and the neighbor gets fatter. And you can do that to a point.
Because it's trying to compensate.
It's trying to compensate. This is the way it compensates. So if you have a nephrectomy, in other words, if you have a kidney removed for any kind of reason, you have immediately a 50% reduction in your glomerular filtration rate. You have half as many nephrons. But it's really interesting. Within a week, that kidney starts to adapt, and within 2 to 3 months, you're back at 80% glomerular filtration rate. That kidney has adapted to that point, and you can function perfectly well on that amount. And then as time goes on, you knock off more and more nephrons, and you get down to the point of 25% GFR, you are in trouble. That is at the point, that's stage 4 kidney disease, and you're on the edge of needing dialysis.
And if you refuse dialysis, then you're looking at the last chapter.
Yes, exactly. Because without your kidneys filtering and removing the water, you're going to have water build up, you're going to have high blood pressure, you're going to have all the other things that go with loss of that functional unit. You're going to get more acidic, you're going to have
malaise and fatigue,
anemia, osteoporosis,
confusion.
The system just really starts to fall apart.
And people don't think about their kidneys except for the fact that I got to go.
Yes.
And they think about their kidneys when they get a bladder infection. You know, bladder infections are the single most common urinary complaint. And a lot of people just don't get anything about the relationship between kidneys and bladder. The bladder itself is holding, it's a collapsible organ, and it swells up with holding urine, and surprisingly enough, it can hold 24 or 26 ounces of urine.
That's pretty impressive.
And those of us that have waited too long can testify to that. But a lot of people say, well, why do I have to go all the time? If it holds 24 to 26 ounces, I shouldn't have to go but a couple of times a day. And that's what's really true.
Yes.
And so if you're having to go a lot, then if you're a male over 50 years old, then we have to look at the possibility that your prostate has expanded to some degree and is inhibiting the flow and the ability to hold urine. And if you're a female that's going very frequently, we also have to look, both in males and females, at food sensitivities.
Absolutely.
You know, when I found the relationship between frequent urination and food sensitivities, it changed my world because I was able to help people that I couldn't help before that. And the single most common sensitivity that I've seen is yeast. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't matter whether the yeast is in bread or the yeast is in beer or the yeast is in soy sauce or the yeast is in vinegar. It doesn't matter. I have seen so many individuals that when they take out the yeasted foods, their frequency and urgency problems end that day.
I was just talking with a colleague at a conference who is a lecturer also, and he was having some difficulty staying on stage until he realized that he had coffee sensitivity, and his every 15 minutes of needing to go to the bathroom after drinking a cup of coffee ended when he stopped drinking the coffee.
Duh!
But yeah, that was his awakening to food sensitivity in this situation. But again, urinary frequency could be, like you said, an infection, and though they do contribute to end-stage kidney disease in a small amount, they're a real annoying symptom of a bladder problem, not a kidney problem.
But they're not a danger.
Right.
The danger, you know, we've got these special little valves that are down at the bottom of the ureter, the tube that connects the bladder and the kidney that keeps the urine from backing back up into the kidney. And so that is one of the protections that you have. So what we have to do is, on this show, separate the understanding of bladder problems from kidney problems, because bladder problems are most often fairly easily solved.
Yes.
Kidney problems are not always fairly easily solved.
And people often think about kidney stones when we talk about kidney disease. And kidney stones are an important player, again, not necessarily associated with end-stage kidney disease, but they do cause a lot of pain, a lot of symptoms, and they do contribute because the oxalate and the uric acid that tend to be associated with these stones are a result of improper diet generally, improper genetics with improper diet, and low intake of water. And fixing the diet and fixing the water intake often clear up these problems and prevent some of the damage that would occur to the kidney.
Well, you know, there's two different kinds of stones. There's calcium stones and oxalate stones. And years ago, when I started in practice, they said, oh, you can't eat any high calcium foods if you have calcium stones.
Right.
Now it's exactly the opposite. The advice is to take calcium if you make calcium stones, simply because of the fact that sometimes if your calcium is really low, the kidney will hoard the calcium.
Yeah, and you also be more acid, and the urine will be more acid, which will precipitate more stones. So you want to alkalinize the urine to some extent to make that work better.
And that's where the acid-alkaline people come in, because having more fruits and vegetables in the diet is definitely one of the ways that we improve the health of the kidney. The thing that hurts the kidney the most, and I have to say, Dr. Harvey, that I see this a lot in my practice today, is these high-protein diets popularized.
Absolutely.
You know, the original Atkins diet turned into the South Beach diet is now turned into the Paleo diet. I'm seeing individuals that have used these high protein diets that are getting really funky kidney numbers. And I'm frankly concerned about their future, because when you have high protein diets, you have high amounts of phosphate, you have high amounts of nitrogen.
Yes.
You know, you're.
And nitrogen is what the kidney is trying to filter out. Creatinine and something called BUN, blood urea nitrogen, these are the things that we look at to be excreted in the urine. And if they're building up in the blood, we know there's a problem. The thing that protein does that's the worst is that immediately, within a half hour of eating a protein meal, glomerular filtration pressure skyrockets. And that is an issue, because if you have high pressure coming into the filter, what do you get? Holes punched in the filter.
Yeah, you blow the balloon up.
Yes, and so you're causing high blood pressure, you're causing kidney damage by every high-protein meal.
Now, if somebody goes on a high-protein diet for 5 days or 15 days in order to jumpstart their weight loss program, I'm not going to lose a lot of sleep about that. What I'm concerned about are the client that I saw a couple of weeks ago who is a woman that weighs 120 pounds, and so as a result of that 120-pound weight, she should be eating about 45 to 50 grams of protein a day, and she was eating 100 grams of protein every day.
Yes.
And so it helped to get her from 145 down to 120. She was looking for 110, but already her BUN, blood urea nitrogen number on her blood test, her creatinine number on her blood test were already starting to skyrocket. Her BUN number, which should have been a number under 20 and ideally under 15, was already 27.
Mm. And that creatinine number is actually what we use to calculate the glomerular filtration rate. And so if that was already starting to rise in somebody young, that's really a frightening thing. You don't
right,
want to
see
that.
She was more interested in being lean
yes.
than she was in being healthy.
Right.
And this is the danger that I see from long-term use of these high-protein diets. I don't deny the fact that individuals can lose weight on them, but, you know what was that terrible joke about the anorexic girl who looked great in a pleated skirt in her coffin?
Yeah.
Because she was nice and lean. You know, it's terrible black humor here mm-hmm. to make something like that into a joke. But what's true is there are people who are dying for leanness.
Yes, it's true. And you know, I think if we look at these diets, they do make sense physiologically for a lot of people who are obese and who have imbalances. Once balanced, it's better to get back to a balanced diet. But some people can't deal with grains, and the paleo diet might be better for them. However, you have to use it with some circumspect approach, and that is keep the protein to what your body requires. Yes, it is a protein-heavy diet because you're eliminating more an animal heavy diet. It doesn't have to be protein heavy. You can keep it to 45, 50, 60 grams of protein and eat lots and lots of vegetables, which is really what more likely the paleo, our Neolithic ancestor actually ate. Lots of vegetables and a little bit of animal product. And so, yeah, we can do it that way. We don't have to have grain. We don't have to have bean, but we do need to have lots of green stuff to help counterbalance.
You can't eat too many vegetables.
Exactly.
You can't
it's
eat
impossible.
Too many vegetables. It's impossible. You can't eat too much fruit. There's no doubt about that. I see people in my practice on virtually a monthly basis that just eat too blinking much fruit.
Yep.
But I've never met anybody yet that eats too many vegetables, and it's hard for me to find people who eat as much vegetables as I do.
And the other part of that paleo diet is the type of fat. If you're going to sit and eat prime rib and butter
and fish fingers and mayonnaise and ice cream,
you're risking more kidney disease, because high fat diets, high saturated fat, high cholesterol diets are associated with accelerated glomerular sclerosis, which is the protein deposition. Sclerosis is scarring, so you get your filter apparatus to scar by eating these high fat diets, and they work hand in hand with the high protein diet. So if you're eating the pure old Atkins with pork rinds, cheese curls, and whatever, you're looking at accelerated kidney problems.
And the best thing is if you're a butterhead.
Yeah, but it's all preventable if you just change, if you catch it early. See high blood pressure, see the dark rings under the eyes, see protein in the urine, any of these things, it can all be reversed. The kidneys are so resilient, just have to change pattern of behavior.
Right, and so when people say my feet are swollen up at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, I'm starting to retain fluid, the first question I ask is, have they gone down completely by the time you wake up in the morning?
Right.
Because if they're swollen at the end of the afternoon, but they're normal when you wake up in the morning, that's kidney. If they're swollen at 4 o'clock in the afternoon and they haven't gone down when you wake up the next morning, that's your heart.
Right.
So when we begin to look at that swelling, people say, oh, well, it's because I'm on my feet all day. You know, I'm a waitress. I'm in retail service. You know, I'm on my feet. Uh-uh, honey.
No way.
No.
Your body's designed to hold that water inside, not let it leak out into edema in your ankle.
Correct. So there are signs that are going on that can tell you that your kidneys are being hammered. You can look at your blood work and see that your BUN number or your creatinine number are elevated. You can have these specialty tests like microalbumin to measure to see whether or not you've got a problem with your kidneys leaking protein or even leaking blood.
Right.
It's not uncommon for people to find RBCs, red blood cells, in the urine. You can notice if you're having more swollen area under the eye or dark circles under the eye or redness under the eye. And it's not uncommon for me to see people who have all of that. They have a puffy area under the eye. They have a dark indentation underneath it. And they have a red area on that puffy section. If your feet are swelling or your fingers are swelling at the end of the day, these are all flags that are saying you're not being nice to your kidneys.
There are some good things nutritionally to do for your kidneys. They've shown that altering the fat composition of your body, you know, instead of doing the high sat fat cholesterol diet, add some omega-3s in. Fish oil has been shown to really improve the kidney function in nephrotic syndrome. Nephrotic syndrome is where you're leaking a lot of protein and end up getting swollen, like Eve was describing.
And my old buddy, phosphatidylcholine.
Absolutely.
Phosphatidylcholine, a supplement, is one of the kinds of fats that we find in the egg yolk.
Yes.
And so even though egg yolk falls into the category of a high phosphate food, the nature of the benefit of the phosphatidylcholine is so important in terms of the membrane health of the kidneys that it's one of the very first recommendations that I make after fish oil.
Yes, phospholipids, the types of fats that actually are comprising the cell membranes. Krill oil is another one that actually contains phospholipids. These phospholipids actually repair the membranes, and the membranes are where the filtering occurs, so it's critical to get them repaired. So these phospholipids have been shown, like the phosphatidylcholine, has been shown to be cytoprotective against injury. And so that if you have, say, a clot that would go to the kidney, and it does occur occasionally, the cells still begin to function afterwards when they're pre-medicated with it. And if someone has an obstruction, a kidney stone stopping the flow or something like that, the injury to the kidney is actually repaired with the phosphatidylcholine. You get kidney function back. So it's really important to look at these other nutritionals to get that.
Well, and I have to remind the vegetarians and the vegans out there, because oftentimes they go, well, you know, I'm just having vegetable protein. You know, that's a whole lot different than flesh protein. But I want to make it clear that soybeans and their byproducts, peas, beans, lentils, all of these things are high in nitrogen and high in phosphate. And so, you know, when you look at soy, the way that it's used by the Asian populations, where it's fundamentally used as a condiment,
yes,
it's very different from people having soy cereal with soy milk with, you know, soy hot dogs for lunch with tofu dinner and soy ice cream before they go to bed.
Yes. Although there is some suggestion that maybe the vegetable protein has a little less burden. It's still the same thing. It's all the same amino acids. And we have to remember that. Fatty acids, amino acids, they acidify the body. Exercise is another critical thing. it has been shown that if you increase your blood flow through exercise, you will actually increase the blood flow in the kidneys. You'll have, especially in somebody who's already got end-stage renal disease, you can, just with exercise, you'll have a 20% increase in exercise tolerance, 20% increase in the ability to utilize the oxygen and actually get your cells more energetic, maybe pay back some of the jing that's been lost. You'll decrease blood pressure, decrease fasting insulin levels, increase the hematocrit, which is the anemia marker. You'll increase it by 27% just with exercise, by helping the kidneys function better with a bit better blood flow. It's really pretty
amazing.
But
remember the best benefit. It improves your mood.
Exactly.
And that makes you more likely that you're going to go out and walk again tomorrow. Dr. Fred Harvey, internist, geriatrician, member of the American Board of Holistic Medicine and practice here in Sarasota now, I guess, what is it, 17 years?
I think
so,
yeah.
Something close to that. And my guest here on No Nonsense Nutrition on the third Monday of the month, most often. Thank you for being with us today.
Thank you.